the whole bandwagon of following England is just bonkers. And they win a game and it's like, well, they're the best team in the world, and they're so not.
OTB AM, weekdays from 7:30 AM. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
We are turning our attention to rugby now and delighted to say that Keith Wood is with us. Good morning to you, Keith.
Morning, Owen. How are you?
Yeah, very good. So let's start off here with what Stuart Lancaster has been saying over the past couple of days. He's been talking about the captain's challenge. He is not happy with this, Keith. He wants to see it binned. Are you on the same side of the fence as him?
I am, which, look, I think Lancaster talks a huge amount of sense all the time. He's absolutely at the leading edge of the game, of the sport, living and breathing every second of it. I thought there was a good merit in the idea of the captain's challenge, but what it's become is this dragged out affair. I think the TMO we've lost the run of the TMO in itself, and there's too many things being referred to it. So the captain's challenge are just additional ones of those. And it's funny, I've had it's an ongoing thing for me that the spirit of the law of rugby is incredibly important. And so because there could be five or six infringements at every breakdown, there's a kind of a flow to it, and the referee tends to dictate what that flow is, and he can understand for him if that guy went off his feet but actually he didn't materially affect something or other. He can make a decision accordingly. So for me, always you've to respect the referee, and that is key, and it always has been key to the game. I think that's been eroded a little because it's now going back to not just blatant mistakes or foul play. It seems to be every possible eventuality you can put up on the screen. And the game has just become untenably long, actually. It's too long and frustrating to watch.
So which parts would you take immediately and erode beyond the captain's challenge? Is it further limitations on the TMO, for instance?
Absolutely. I think you need to be able to look at the TMO and for scoring of tries, and it can't go down to super slow-mo and there is a possibility of a ball moving forward in that instance. For me, if you're looking at it five or six times, you just have to accept the fact that, yeah, as close as could be, that's a try, as opposed to whether there may or may not have been the most minute of knock-ons. And in times past, they all would have been tries. That's the simple truth of it. And I don't think you should be going back to see... I think you do need to go back and see foul play. I do think that's very important. And I think, World Rugby are having a big drive to try and tidy up the game. And I think that's something that's very important. But for the ones that there's an immediate sense of doubt, is it or isn't it, you need to just try and move those out. So blatant is the word I would use. If there's something that's been done blatantly, it's a blatant knock-on or a blatant high tackle, or foul play, absolutely, TMO protects the players. Other than that, it just drives everybody mad.
The length of the game is one of the big issues, as you mentioned there, Keith. The TMO is obviously one of the reasons behind it. Are there other facets of the game at the moment that you're looking at and thinking to yourself, that needs to be speeded up or that needs to be taken away because these two-hour spectacles are spectacles no more in quite a few moments?
Well, I tell you, TV will lose the run of itself pretty soon. And when you have fans back in the ground, they'll get very frustrated with the extent of those games. So, and TV schedules you suddenly have to put them 2.5 hours between each other or 3 hours, just in case, because the matches are kind of overlapping. So that's one of the byproducts of it. For me, I'm still, the things that I would want to change are the height of the tackle. I'd still like to be brought down a little bit lower. And the idea of the jackler, I've never liked the jackler. It wasn't there when I started, and I feel like an old man saying things like that. But the idea of using your feet, you weren't ever allowed to use your hands in a ruck. And that meant if you suddenly saw hands in a ruck, it was a penalty. So I did rather the rucking with your feet, even though I know that isn't considered the most palatable. But for me, it's the idea that only one person gets to put their hand on the ball. And at the moment, you've people complaining to the referee that they're on their feet, they're entitled to be there. Well, if they weren't the first person in from the opposition, you can't have another two or three guys deciding to put their hands on the ball because it's there in front of them, you know. So they're the bits I'd like to tidy up a little. But other than that, I like the game. I think it's, we've had a few ups and downs in the last few years, but a lot of it's very good. For me, I just want it a little bit safer. I also think that if you bring the tackle height down a little, that means there's going to be more offloads and that becomes more exciting.
Keith, in terms of the referee's role, like, we have a lot of voices now. You think back to the Champions Cup final and Wayne Barnes is the assistant referee, yet at times it seemed to flow between himself and Luke Pearson. You're wondering who was actually refereeing the game. Is it too complicated in terms of the rules just for one referee? Do we need that? Do we need very vocal assistant referees, a very vocal TMO, because so much is expected of the referee?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, Nathan. And but I would ask it slightly differently. And I would say, who is in charge? And you need to make certain that the authority of the referee is sacrosanct. And if he comes out afterwards and says, yeah, I made a mistake there, we should accept the fact that he made a mistake. And that should be fine. But when you hear TMOs trying to convince referees for different reasons, I think that undermines the referee. So I do think you need other voices. And I do think the game is very complex and complicated. But I still think the guy in the middle is the guy that should have the authority. And it's funny, the referees that you tend to like are the ones that talk, the ones that show high levels of respect to the opposition or to the captains, but also are quite hard on the players. You know, so we have to stop some of the stuff. There's too much, and it's interesting, some of Lancaster's comments about there's too much appealing going on. There absolutely is too much appealing going on. But that's rectified incredibly easily in rugby, because you march them back 10 metres and say, lads, shut up. The only person who's allowed to talk to me is the captain. Now, in that instance, you have to treat the captain with respect, and the captain has to treat the referee with respect. And that's the way the game is and should be managed as well as possible. That's one of the key components for me. So I think you should have a conversation with the captain when you need to. But the captain can't challenge every single decision that's made in the game. And that's what's actually come in the last two or three years.
Keith, it does feel as though, sorry, Anna, it does feel over the last decade that maybe there's been a bit of a cult of a referee in terms of Jerome Garcay, Wayne Barnes, Nigel Owens, that when it's announced ahead of a Six Nations game, it's either welcomed from an Irish point of view or there's massive groans. Was that always the case? Was the rugby referee always held up more than a football referee who, by and large, you don't take any notice of until the game is getting underway?
Always. Always. And always for the reason that rugby is an incredibly complicated game. And every time you hear somebody say it's very simple, you know they don't understand it very well, because it is complicated. There is nuance. It isn't exactly black and white. And as I described earlier on, you could have 5, 6, 7, 8 infringements at every single ruck. So how do you make the determination over which one is first and which one is fitting within the spirit of the game? So if you look at soccer, it's pretty much not nuanced. I mean, the only nuanced part really for the most part is, did he make contact for that tackle to fall over, or is he offside or not? And even for me, I'm looking at soccer and the TMO at times has said, yeah, his right shoulder is an inch offside. That's just lunacy for me. I mean, lunacy. And it's brought down to that level where you're kind of, that becomes a huge issue. And I think it takes away an awful lot from the game. So, I always think referees have different styles because it depends on what the refereeing was like in their country. Now, they're trying to homogenize that as much as they can in world rugby, but the French will still say jouer, you know, and the New Zealanders might be a little bit more lax as to what is a forward pass or not, because they want the ball to be lashed all over the field. Such is life, you know, and you have to understand where the ref is and where the ref is with that. And I do think there's been a cult of the referee, But look, for me, I still think that as a supporter of the game, as a watcher of the game, Nigel Owens was a little bit entertaining. I think maybe sometimes was too much about him, but for 95% of it, it wasn't. I thought he was an excellent referee. And there's also a sense of small sense of humour within it. And that, I think, deflated anger at different times. So I was happy enough to have a guy of that quality reffing a game, you know, and you may not like some of his interpretations, but they're his interpretations, you know, and you have to cater for that and you have to play accordingly.
It's interesting that you mentioned the offside thing in football, Keith, because that has definitely killed some of the spontaneity with football a little bit. Even when Scotland qualified for the Euros, their goalkeeper wasn't sure whether or not he could celebrate after saving a penalty in case VAR were pulling back for stepping off his line. Do you fear that rugby could move in that similar direction over the next little while unless there is some sort of arresting on the way it's moved over the last couple of weeks?
Look, because when you're trialing something, you're going to see the possible unintended consequences. And one of those is not knowing that the final whistle is over. I mean, sorry, that has to be one of the things that happens. And as it stands, the TMO can go back on something, definitely, in that instance anyway. But no, it doesn't look right, doesn't feel right. It feels almost like a litigious part of sport as opposed to sport. I don't like the look of it. And I think you want to be able to celebrate at the end and not be having a peptic ulcer trying to figure out whether there's a TMO call again after the final whistle.
Just a couple of other things we wanted to get your take on this morning, Keith. We were covering David Nusafora and his press conference last week. A number of interesting threads from it. One of them is this notion, or this fact now, that we're unclear about whether or not he's going to hang around beyond next year. His contract finishes up next year. If you're working with the IRFU at the moment, would you be looking for a potential successor to Nusafora at the moment?
I think they should have been looking for the last 2 or 3 years and for the guy after that. Mm. And thankfully for us at the moment, I think we have, there are a chunk of people who have played rugby for Ireland and who have got involved in the game at the highest level and have the whole gamut of skills that are required. So I think when Nusafora was employed, I don't think that was the case. So now you look at it and you say you have Conor O'Shea, you have David Humphreys, who has been a director of rugby and a coach and has dealt with agents, which becomes incredibly important for holding on to players, which becomes an increasingly important part of the job in Ireland. We also need to have a huge drive on talent development because that's something that's required. We are very top heavy with the school system and the Leinster school system, which is brilliant for Leinster and actually great for the other provinces because we tend to take players that don't get into that squad because of the amount of numbers that you have. But that is one pipeline. We need far more. We need the club game to be far stronger. We need guys that mature at 20, 21, 22 and suddenly have the confidence, the skill, whatever it is. We need that conduit working as well because they bring a different focus from somebody that's been stuck in an academy from 17 or 18 years of age. So you're looking for different pipelines all the time. And I don't know that in that period of time that we have had that part of the Irish game supported. It is one of the core legs of the stool.
And that's the thing, like I guess Nusafora could maybe make the point that as performance director, supporting the club game directly isn't necessarily in his brief, or maybe he doesn't have time to do it. Do you think that there should be more of a focus on that, maybe a slight changing of the brief for the next performance director that comes in?
I do, actually. I think he's right in what he said, and I think it's a very, very big job. Mm. And but we need to be, it would be great to have a... I've got to say high profile, but that kind of sounds like the wrong thing. But it's somebody who knows the Irish game inside and out and is able to find some of these pearls that are maybe drifting through the net. And we do need to build up the club game because we can't be that reliant on one part of our system. And we need to support the schools and clubs, the schools and underage clubs in the other regions, a huge amount, because we don't have the exact privilege that of having well-funded coaches as they have in Leinster, in the other places. And we need to make certain, not that we redress that, but that we get as many players as we possibly can through the system. And Leinster have actually used their funding model incredibly well to expand out into the club area in the wider Leinster regions. And I think they're doing really, really well with that. But at times it becomes too easy to take a really well-established schools player at 18 years of age that's been through 6 years of very intensive training and comes out really, really well, and say, well, actually, he's already an identical rugby player. Let's take him rather than develop some of the others. So I know that's happening, and that sounds like a big criticism. It needs to happen more. And for that, it probably needs somebody over that in the IRFU that is almost on a same level as the director of high performance, because it's absolutely needed.
Yeah, like, it's interesting as well, Keith, that all our conversations around Irish people abroad in Irish rugby, I mean, is to do with players and coaches that we rarely think about, as you said, David Humphreys or Conor O'Shea, and the work they've done administratively as well as on a coaching level, and the value that they could offer if this role does become available next year.
Well, I think these are things that become very important, and at times I feel as if I'm being sort of anti people from other countries, and I'm definitely not. What I would say in terms of provincial rugby in Ireland, and when a player isn't deemed good enough in one province and is taken into another province, or that there is no path for him in one province and there is a path in another province, that's fantastic. But it does slightly erode what that province is. And like, I think that the high level of commercialism that's required, there's an ethos that is involved in some of these provinces, in all of these provinces, and they're historical provinces, not just from a rugby perspective. But they're the things that light it up for a supporter, that there is an emotional attachment to them. Now, they want to win as well, and you always want to have people from overseas playing with them, but it's trying to get the blend right. I think in the last number of years, that blend has been a bit off.
All right, Keith, great stuff as ever. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Brilliant.
This morning.
Cheers, gents.
The OTV Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetSetGo.ie.